AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show for today, a historic day in America, and not for good reason. I'm going to read a statement here that's not my own. I will tell you whose it is in just a moment. Minnesotans should have the freedom to make their own health care decisions, and the U.S. Supreme Court has just ruled that they do not. This decision is extreme and reckless. It will be devastating to people seeking to obtain care in complex medical cases, and it destroys people's right to exercise their own judgment about the health care they need. While abortion is still safe and legal in Minnesota, we know that Minnesota Republicans would enact the very same extreme and reckless laws that we've seen in Texas and Missouri. To protect Minnesotans' productive freedom and their right to seek the health care they need, we must elect a pro-choice governor, House, and Senate. As the Speaker of the House, I will ensure Minnesotans are legally entitled to make their own decisions about their health care, including their right to access abortion, birth control, and other reproductive health care. That's a statement put out by Minnesota Speaker of the House, Melissa Hortman, who we have on the line right now. Hello, Melissa.
Thanks for having me this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. I know it's always a busy time for you. So I certainly wanted to talk to you about Minnesota legislative things, the session, not getting the things done that was hopefully supposed to get done, and then maybe having a special session and then not. But I thought you may want to talk a little bit about this historic, overturning of Roe v. Wade as well.
Yeah, what a remarkable day. Who would have thought in our lifetimes that we would see the United States Supreme Court move backwards on ensuring individual rights and freedoms? You know, over the history of this country, we have seen the Supreme Court be more protective of individual rights. And this is just a major step backwards in time. And it's kind of horrifying for those of us who feared that this was possible, but wanted to convince ourselves that it wasn't really possible that they would go this far.
Exactly. Roe v. Wade has been the law of the land in your and my whole adult life. And my adult life is getting pretty long now. And
same.
And we've been talking about it for months. It's kind of no surprise, but then when it actually happened, it was still shocking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I have a 19-year-old daughter, who now doesn't have the same rights that people my age did. Even my mother, most of her adult life, had this and coverage, and even though it wasn't used by her, I'm preaching to the choir.
It matters even for those of us who did not avail ourselves of that right, knowing that it was there, knowing that we had that right, there was a degree of safety of, something horrific happens to me if I'm raped, if I have a problem pregnancy at a time in my life where it's just not possible for me economically, or if the fetus that I'm carrying in a wanted pregnancy develops a condition that's incompatible with life. Always knowing that it would be my legal choice of whether to terminate that pregnancy rather than carry it to term. Now my U.S. constitutional right is impaired. My state constitutional right is intact. But it is at risk in this election, completely at risk in this election.
Absolutely. We really have to work hard to make sure that we turn out the vote, even more so than we usually do here in Minnesota. It's more important than it's been, like I said, in our lifetimes. And I'm a little speechless. It's been a weird day.
I think we all are. One thing I don't think a lot of people think about is the fact that in Minnesota, a constitutional amendment, in order to put that on the ballot, it only requires the affirmative vote of the House and the Senate. So even if people say, we've got to put all our eggs in the basket of Tim Walz, and we have to make sure that Tim Walz gets reelected, that's not enough to protect our rights in Minnesota, because a Republican House and a Republican Senate would go to the ballot and they would seek to overturn that Minnesota Supreme Court case and our current protections in the Minnesota Constitution with a constitutional amendment. So we have to win the governor's race, and we have to win the House or the Senate, if not both.
Yeah, well, I plan on having us win all three. And they're not just stopping here either. 10 years ago, we went through the huge fight about gay marriage. And they, you know, a lot of the Republicans here in Minnesota have said, you know, they want voter ID. That's another thing that became, you know, they wanted to put on the amendment. An amendment on the state constitution. There are a lot of other things that they're coming after this. So,
totally. Yeah. I mean, I think what I understand from commentators, and I have not read the opinion yet myself, but that Justice Thomas mentioned in his concurring opinion that he thought we needed to take the Supreme Court needed to take a look at the birth control and the marriage equality cases.
Because that's correct.
What Roe really decided was that we, all of us, we have a right to privacy. And I think Americans think that their right to privacy is pretty important. But what Justice Thomas said today is, hey, we conservatives here on the Supreme Court, we don't think it's very important. And so, you know, it sounds alarmist to say that marriage equality is next. But Justice Thomas said it is. They have taken some rights from women, and they are coming back for more. Birth control is at risk, and marriage equality is at risk.
Yes, he used words that are downright scary. Clarence Thomas just said, contraception and same-sex marriage are errors that the Supreme Court has a duty to correct now that Roe is overturned.
Wow. So isn't that nuts? I mean, it's extreme and it's reckless. And I think those are the words that describe Minnesota Republicans and our national Republicans at this point in time. You know, we used to have a Republican Party that we could disagree with on, you know, economic issues and policy issues, but have a reasonable debate.
Yeah.
But now the party has really been taken over by extremists, and even some of the most conservative Republicans in the Minnesota legislature are being challenged from the right.
Yeah.
So it's just so important that we have a majority DFLers in the House and the Senate.
Yeah. Yes. I don't understand what their thinking is, because everybody has seen all the polling and everything about this, and they're against the, you know, American people, basically. So but let's talk a little bit about what happened in the legislature here during this last session. It sounded like you had made a deal, a bipartisan budget deal, and then not, and then yes, and then not. What happened?
Yeah, so the 4 years that I've been speaker, I have had really extraordinary agreements that we've been able to reach with Minnesota Senate Republicans to at least preserve decent funding for education and health care. And we've come together and we've gotten things done. And then this year, at the very end, things blew up. And I'll tell you, the difference is year one, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka, man of his word. Year two, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka, man of his word. Year three, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka, man of his word. And year four, Jeremy Miller, who has no intention of standing behind his word. And, you know, while I disagreed with Paul Gazelka on almost every issue, he and I were able to work together to get things done for the people of Minnesota, even in the election year. Even in 2020, when COVID was raging and it was an election year.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing in the Minnesota Senate is that the GOP majority has gotten so extreme that they can't even work together to get things done. They're so focused on doing bad things to Democrats that they won't agree to do good things for Minnesotans.
It almost seems like they want things to be bad for Minnesotans so that they can use it in their campaign to say, see how bad things are for you? And we need to change.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
Well, you really hit the nail on the head there, because one area, for example, that they claim they want to make a difference is public safety. And Democrats as well, we would like to make investments, because all over the country, all over the world, since COVID, crime rates are up. And there are investments that we could make on a bipartisan basis that would have an impact on that. So if Minnesota Republicans truly wanted to do something about public safety, they would compromise with Minnesota Democrats, and we would fund investments in public safety. But actually, like you said, they would rather have things go poorly for people. They would rather have there be more victims of crime than there need to be so that they can exploit it politically. And I just, it's so dangerous to have a political party that's become so extreme that they put Minnesotans' well-being at risk for their own political interests.
Yes. Part of the bill also had, of course, more funding for education, which most Republicans want. I know that from when I used to door knock, when I ran 10 years ago. I had Republicans saying they would vote for me because they knew the Democratic Party was the party that wanted to support public schools, and they knew even back then the Republican Party was against it. And also now the law enforcement has pointed out that if we invest in early childhood and extracurricular things for children in schools, that will help public safety. They're not moving forward, it seems like. So did you, back in May, when the deal was made, I think it was May 13th or something, about a week before the end of session, did you really feel confident that it was all going to go through and we would have a nice ending to the session?
I did, because in my experience as Speaker in dealing with the Republican majority in the Senate, I had never known them to go back on their word. Once we had a signed agreement, it was a matter of the leaders kind of teaming up, really, and helping the members finish the work to get things done. And when we had committee chairs that would butt heads from the House and the Senate, then the leaders would kind of as a team work with the committee chairs to try to get through the thornier issues. What I found working with Senator Miller this year was a total unwillingness to fulfill the agreement that he had signed. I think he had buyer's remorse, and it did not matter to him that he had signed his name and that he had made a commitment. He was not willing to be a person of his word and to stand by the deal that he made. Few days of the session, I was just so disappointed that this individual who I thought was a person of his word turned out not to be.
Yeah, I didn't even realize there was signatures and everything. There's That's also right. word that Scott Jensen, who's the now gubernatorial endorsed Republican candidate for governor, that was redundant, sorry. He apparently pressured the legislature to not go through with this deal. Do you think that he really had pull with them or pull with Jeremy Miller?
No, I don't think so. They don't really even like him. He wasn't a particularly popular member of the Republican caucus because he was kind of all over the map. When he got on a bill to support red flag laws, reasonable gun violence prevention position, which he has now apologized for.
Yeah.
The Republicans in the Minnesota Senate were like, you're not one of us. And Scott Jensen was a flip-flopper his whole time in the Senate. Nobody could ever guess where he would be, including his Republican colleagues. So I don't think it's that. I think it's that there's a few right-wingers in the Senate caucus already, and then there are 15 primaries where there are Republican senators who are being challenged from the right. And so I think that they're running scared, and I think that they are thinking more about their political survival than about what's good for the people in their districts.
And it kind of flummoxes me because, running for the state house is a lot different than running for Congress or something. And the fact that they would have far right candidates who are throwing themselves in and challenging incumbents, how do they raise enough money to have a campaign to even win in the primary? What's behind all this? Do you feel like you have a handle on that?
Yeah, there's a really toxic group in Minnesota called Action for Liberty, and they've gotten one sociopath elected, Eric Mortensen from Shakopee. I mean, the guy is really very interested in burning the place down, and he has gotten, he's teamed up with this guy who runs the organization, who basically just raises money to pay himself a big salary, but then also uses money to help other Action for Liberty folks get elected. So, like in Hastings, for example, you know, there used to be a moderate Republican named Tony Jurgens as a state representative. Not too moderate. I mean, not like pro-choice or pro-gay rights or anything. Mm-hmm. A conservative's conservative, but like a person who was willing to compromise to get things done. So I don't know if moderate's the right word.
Right.
But there was a kind of a far right-wing person who got into the race and got the Republican endorsement. And I think it's just these far right folks were organized and they were ready and they leaped in and displaced some of these more conventional Republicans.
Hmm. And do you think that worries the Minnesota Republican Party because they're just going to have a bunch of crazies running in the general election?
Well, I think so. What Minnesota Republicans seem to be intent on doing is kind of distracting and dividing the electorate. Minnesota Republicans are very interested in spreading a lot of lies about Democrats at this point because I think they want to distract from the struggle within their own party between the sane and the insane.
Right. Yeah, and they're giving Governor Walz an awful lot of credit. They apparently think that he created worldwide inflation on his own. That's what
I mean, interesting. We're seeing this in really every industrialized country on the planet coming out of COVID, where we had a really, really low, level of spending during the quarantines and during when COVID was raging. And now we have this rebound, right, where everybody cannot wait to get out and go out to dinner and travel. And that, of course, is having an impact on prices.
Right.
We were all sitting in our houses, and now we're using gas driving to work. So, yes, interesting that Minnesota Republicans will attribute to Democrats things that just flat out have nothing to do with them.
Yeah, and it's, you know, they'll say it's Biden's fault, but then when they're talking about Minnesota, they'll say it's Walz's fault, you know. I don't know. I have more confidence in Minnesotans. I feel confident that they can see through that.
Our polling data really shows that Minnesotans are sticking with Walz. They get that he's a guy who is practical, common sense. He's a guy who kind of tells it like it is and does what needs to be done. He sure saved a lot of lives during COVID. When you look at the states around us who had Republican leadership where there was a lot more death and illness than there was here in our state.
Right. And now we're a state that, you can still have reproductive care and other states around us.
That's right.
Wisconsin right now, you cannot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just nuts. So it'll be interesting to see what impact that has on people who live in Wisconsin and what choices they'll make about where they want to be.
Yeah. Also, some more insider kind of things. I know Kurt Dowd and everybody is saying, oh, next year when the Republicans are in, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They're all saying that. But fundraising is incredible. They have no money. None of their campaigns nor the state party has any money, and the Democrats are raising like mad. So that says something about Minnesotans.
Really hard. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that reflects the strength of the party. I think the DFL and our candidates and the Minnesota House DFL caucus, we look at fundraising as organizing, right? We want to make sure that folks know what's happening at the Minnesota State Capitol, who we are, and what we're working for. And I think that our success in fundraising reflects our success in reaching out to people and telling that story, that we're working hard for their interests at the Capitol, whether it's strong funding for public education, affordable health care, or an economy that works for everyone. We're working hard for them every day at the state capitol, and we want to make sure Minnesotans know that.
Yeah, and I know, too, from kind of you know, when I used to run and working with campaigns, that especially large money donors, they give sometimes to both parties because they want to pick winners. And I think that is kind of a reflection on what's going on. It seems like the people who, you know, spend money supporting candidates on both sides are not supporting any candidates on the Republican side right now, because I think they kind of, I don't know, I feel like they're kind of doomed almost.
Well, it gets to be a poor reflection on the donors. You know, we have such extreme Republicans running for office in Minnesota right now and running the parties in Minnesota right now, that I think that people are concerned that it tarnishes their reputation to be associated with that level of extremism. The average Minnesotan wants people to come together, compromise, and get things done.
Yes, I agree. And I think the average Minnesotan is going to make sure that they get to the polls this fall. I should let you go. I know you're extremely busy, and I've kept you even longer than I told you I would, and I very much appreciate that. This has been a really enlightening conversation, I think. Anything else that you would like the listeners to hear you say?
Sure. Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you this afternoon, Todd, and I want folks to know that we have a really strong path to the majority because in the redistricting panel drew us a bunch of seats that lean DFL. But because it's a midterm, we need everybody to get engaged. We can't take anything for granted. So folks should get on out and contact their local candidates. Come door knocking with us. Have a cup of coffee. We generally have a cup of coffee before or after our door knocks. It's a way to be with like-minded people in your community. Mm-hmm. And we really appreciate the help, and we need it here in 2022.
Absolutely. And like we talked about, especially out in my district, when you do go do something like door knock or work with a local candidate, you're surprised at how many Democrats you come in contact with, and it makes you feel good. So
It's always good to be out with like-minded people.
Right. And meeting people who live in your neighborhood that you didn't know that there were this many Democrats in your neighborhood. So,
absolutely.
At least where I live.
Well, thanks for the conversation. And I hope you and all of your listeners have a fantastic weekend.
All right. Thank you very much. You as well. That was Speaker Melissa Hortman, Minnesota Speaker of the House, calling in. Thank you again so much, Melissa. And we will take a short break and come back. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.